Thank you very much. It's very good to be with you, very good to join you to talk about this question particularly. I was very gratified not to be asked to give a report on how to reverse the political decline. that broader question would both require longer time of me and perhaps more of candor than the current climate in the United States is willing to accept from me. The question of the Academy is one I can broach far more comfortably, particularly in the company of such friends as you are, and largely because the Philadelphia Society has a great deal to do with my understanding of what has transpired in the Academy in the past 20 years. Baptist preacher child though I am not going to preach to the choir today and attempt to elucidate a model of education and a full set of proposals for reversing the decline in the Academy. What I will do instead, if you will indulge me, is muse with you about my own education. And if in the course of doing so there might fall some apothegm that may prove useful in reflecting on decline, then so be it. I noted that President Smith did not read that one course title of mine that has always given me the greatest difficulty, the course I teach called Moral Fables and What They Tell. Let us this afternoon, for a few moments, permit me to invent a true-to-life moral fable, if you will. I said at the outset the Philadelphia Society has a lot to do with my perception of these things, and I mean that quite literally. My own education, my own devotion to the Academy, you might say, was directly caused by the young Philadelphia Society back in 1966. To understand that, you must know that at that time I was in the last years of my undergraduate education and probably fairly certainly slotted towards politics, as certainly as one could be who had made the trajectory from a pre-medicine undergraduate major to a political science undergraduate major with a heavy dose of political activism and without anything much more concrete in the way of career objectives. I was at that time active in campaigns in California, in young Republican and young conservative organizations. And the Philadelphia Society asked me to join them in San Francisco to talk about the new left. You'll remember what a hot topic that was in the middle 60s. And I did so. I went to speak there, as I'd spoken in many other places at that time. There on the program was someone whose work I knew but indirectly and whom I had never met to talk on the same subject. His name was Harry Jaffa. And as I delivered my remarks and then sat and participated in the discussions in those 2 days, and particularly listened to Harry Jaffa, I came to the startling conclusion that I was entirely uneducated, knew nothing at all, had no business being there, speaking to anyone, and should do nothing but hie myself into the university, wherever that man was, and to learn something, which I did. Now, that remarkable transition meant that then, for the next 20 years, I would be devoted to life in the Academy. Despite certain truths which the loyal members of the Philadelphia Society made clear to me even at that time, in the beginning, go though I might, study though I surely would, learn though perhaps I could, I would not get a job. I was going to study things and with people which would leave me far outside the established academic profession. And thus I had to make that decision in a context in which it seemed to be the most imprudent of things. And yet it was a decision that left poised in the balance, in attention, if you will, the choice of the active life, the political life, and the academic life. Being persuaded as I was that there was an intimate connection between those principles and ideas which are developed in the Academy and those crises which we periodically suffer in our politics, it was not difficult for me to choose. I was aware that it was necessary to devote myself to the Academy even if I were not going to find a job. I didn't know what the answer to the later questions would be. Suppose I went into the academy, suppose I began to teach, suppose I helped to produce new teachers, and suppose I broadened the base of conservative thought in the American academy. What would become of it all? Would it in fact naturally percolate up through the political system and translate itself into more effective political and social action in the United States? I couldn't answer those questions. But I was persuaded that this was where it all had to begin. I'd like to put this in context for you so that you can see what I mean. I want to read you a passage from a Supreme Court decision that was issued in the year in which my oldest child was born. A very short passage. The history and culture of Western civilization reflect a strong tradition of parental concern for the nurture and upbringing of their children. This primary role of the parents in the upbringing of their children is now established beyond debate as an enduring American tradition. That language was not dicta, an offhand comment, but the principle upon which Justice Burger, Chief Justice Burger, writing for the court, defended the rights of the Amish to educate their young as they would. An extraordinary opinion, given what we're likely to receive from the court today. Extraordinary even in 1972, when it was penned. For you see, I knew already by then that this certain tradition of Western civilization, established beyond debate, he argued, had already crumbled and disappeared within the academy. Now this provides us a metric, if you will, to measure the time it takes for the mere corruption of the academy to translate itself into the corruption of our body politic. For how long was it after 1972 when we could no longer expect a court to utter such an emphatic defense of Western civilization? Did we come to the rejection of Western civilization at Stanford only at the end of a long period of years, or had it already occurred before then? Well, I think most of you know that the answer is that the ground had rotted away, the fretworks, if you will, had rotted away long before the Stanford faculty acted. I would say even already by 1978, the court could no longer speak so. That trends set in motion in the academy were then operating. But that leads then to the more important question. Those of us who made that decision, as I made as a result of your direct intervention, and went into the academy, have, of course, increased in numbers in the course of the years. What has been the consequence of that increase? Are we also producing the kinds of effects that have shown up from the other side of the spectrum in the utter corruption of our political and legal principles? I'm not sure we have. One of the reasons I'm not sure we have is because, as you know, I find myself today struggling not behind the rostrum in a classroom merely, though I still teach full time, but indeed also undertaking the political struggle, having to make that journey back, in all appearances, from the academy to the realm of politics, because the decay that has set in seems so deep, so urgent, so rooted, that we cannot perhaps wait even the 10 years for ideas to percolate up from those souls wandering like missionaries in the vineyards of education. When we talk about the decline of the academy in those kinds of terms, in those generational terms, if you will, the question that I am left with is, what is there left for us to accomplish in the academy in the way of time? Or did the previous work of deconstruction so materially disrupt the basis for transmitting cultural principles and moral authority in our society that only original work of moral and political reconstruction can save us? I'm not sure that our opportunities are such as will permit us to enjoy the luxury of working from within the academy. And I say that with a deep regret, But there's nothing I love so much than those hours of idle leisure and study. I once reflected to people to whom I addressed on the question of my assignment at the Commission on Civil Rights that I've undertaken this task unwillingly, for I'd much prefer to read Shakespeare. And if I'm not going to be reading Shakespeare, then I damn well better be getting something done, because I'm going to be angry otherwise. I rather suspect that as we approach the question today of the decline in the Academy, that this is the perspective we're faced with, of measuring, of weighing, when and where can something be done. The decline is reversible in principle, in theory. Our most urgent question is, what practices are required?